Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can.
Welcome to Shrink Wrap, the talk show that helps you unwrap the issues blocking your road to a happy and fulfilling life. I'm licensed marriage and family therapist Phyllis Chase, and I'm here every Tuesday evening at Drive Time here on KCSN 88.5 FM, Arts and Roots Radio. So tonight we're talking about sex. Yes, sexual satisfaction for those long-term relationships. There's so many sexless marriages out there that I think it's a topic that we really need to be talking about. So stay tuned to Shrink Wrap because it's really all about tuning into you. My two guests tonight are Cindy Pierce and Edie Morgan, and they have written a book called Finding the Doorbell, Sexual Satisfaction for the Long Haul. So when it comes to talking about sex, they are the polar opposites. Cindy came from a big family, one that was pretty open about talking about sex, and she was the youngest of sex, hearing about sex. No, there was a lot of sex in that family with seven children. But anyway, she was the youngest of seven. So with all the older siblings, she certainly heard a lot before she was probably ready to. But anyway, she's very open about talking about sex. And she wrote a one-woman show called Finding the Doorbell, the same name as the book. And her friend, Edie, is a freelance writer and Olympic skier whose puritanical upbringing included exactly no communication about sex. Yet somehow she and her husband managed to produce two children. She represents the silent majority. And also Cindy has three children with her husband, Bruce. They are innkeepers in New Hampshire. So welcome, you guys. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So listen, tell us how you came to write this book.
Well, after the show, I was doing in New Hampshire. It started in New Hampshire and, took it to Boston, New York, and Maine. When I first did it, I thought, well, I'll do this once. My friends pushed me to start telling my stories about my own life publicly. And the first time I did it, it really resonated. And then I tried it for a bigger audience. And before you know it, I did it for 840 people. And we realized that people really don't want to talk about it themselves, but they like being in a dark audience, hearing someone else throw themselves under the bus. And, it's very self-deprecating telling my stories.
And I would be in the audience seeing the reactions of couples and talking to them, after they went home and sort of what happened. And what was happening is they were able to go home and get in bed afterwards and sort of retell stories than lines they heard in the show and start laughing about stuff that they had never dreamed of talking about.
So it often, even just seeing the show, would reignite their sexual relationship?
People did report that.
It did. It just was like a big weight being lifted off their shoulders that, you know what, we can talk about this. We can actually laugh about this.
Mm-hmm. And it starts, seeing it and talking about it. And I think probably there's a lot that you communicate that really normalizes the lack of sex going on. There's so many sexless marriages today.
Absolutely. And that we feel like work, stress, just general stress, kids, just builds a wedge. And sex is the last thing that gets tended to when you're just trying to scramble and go along. And what I realized in my marriage, I call it my wise women panel, my three older sisters and my three sisters-in-law, who were very open and shared so much with me over the years. And I've added to that wise women panel with women over the years. So I've been talking with women a lot. And the reality is that there is so much to get in the way. And if you can't laugh about all the things that are going on and you can't talk about it, you can't get back to sex. And how to break down that wedge. What I learned from my sisters-in-law and my sisters is that if you can laugh, you can start breaking down that wedge. And I watched them do it.
She also saw a lot of these relationships in progress. She saw them forming and breaking up. And so she was very much a part of a lot of marriages, whereas most people, sort of had more of an upbringing, I think, like myself, where the only marriage you really know is your own. So you start going through these things, and it's a really uncomfortable thing to talk about with your spouse, and you really can't talk about it outside the marriage because you feel like you're violating the trust. So everyone feels sort of alone in this deepening spiral in the wedge that's growing between them.
Scared that
they're the only ones,
yeah, they're the only one, and that if they talk about the fact that they have no sex in their marriage, that it might be over, or that people might judge them, or that they're just not going to be able to get to a solution.
Yeah.
Because
when we started when we decided to write the book, we threw out the idea to people, and we thought some people wouldn't feel comfortable talking about this. It's turned out everybody, almost, I would say, 97% of the people we sort of brought it up with had something to contribute that they wanted to be represented in the book, and that it was clearly universal, this, wondering if they're having enough sex, guilty about not having enough sex.
Bitter because they're not getting
enough
sex.
So much bitterness of the fellas.
So evil twins, bitterness and guilt. They
yes,
work in tandem.
Bitterness and guilt, yeah. So they... We found that instantly we knew this book was desperately needed. I mean, not just needed, desperately needed.
And people would say, how do you get people to talk about their sex lives with you? And we, within days, we knew, how do you get them to stop? And in
how
any environment.
Get them to stop?
And we had to, at first we're like guaranteeing people everything's anonymous. Don't worry about, nothing will be revealed. People didn't care.
Yeah.
We just stopped even saying it. They just wanted to get it off their chest, and we're so relieved at the ability to be able to talk freely about this stuff. And we've saw, certainly since the book is just out, but from the feedback we've gotten, same thing. People are just so relieved to be able to see that they're normal, to see that that good sex isn't this thing that's sort of bestowed upon these few special gorgeous people. That it's something you really have to work at, and that anyone can have if you have communication and if you have really realistic expectations.
Sure, there's got to be a Hollywood myth kind of component to,
yeah,
you've got to have hot sex, you've got to have
right.
sexy lingerie, you've got to know all the tricks. And you say this book is for people who don't usually buy sex books.
Right. Like when we first did our research and we went in and looked at all the sex books out there, there was an amazing amount of books with just promising 365 positions for you, 3-hour orgasms. It's like, are you kidding me? I've
got to
clean the toilets. I'm an innkeeper.
I just
want to
have sex naked with one other person.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Let's keep it simple. In bed, And lingerie, how about getting the underwear off? Like, that's what really we're after, because let's get it done here before, I mean, it sounds really crass, but it's timing is a big part of it. Women, most of the women we talked about, like the most arousing thing to women is sleep. Like women with kids, they're like, just give me some sleep. And so if women can get some more sleep, they're more open to having more sex.
Sure.
And
not just sleep, but just getting the daily grind, chores, the laundry, the dishes, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And we have a chapter in there called The Little Things That Get You Laid. And it really is. It's just easing the load.
That's what John Gray calls foreplay, right?
Yeah, the foreplay of foreplay.
Indeed,
yeah.
Foreplay.
And the foreplay of foreplay can start at 8 in the morning. And that's Cindy's a big sex planner.
Yeah.
She advocates you plan for sex or else it's not going to happen.
That's the advice I give my couples. You've got to plan like a date
plan
night or whatever.
It. Yeah.
It's got to get in the schedule.
Because once you plan it, then you start. My husband's hopping. He's getting those dishes done. Hoppity, hop, hop,
the
hop.
Anticipation.
Nothing more arousing
is
than
what
that.
Works, because when we were all dating,
it was all you were
sex,
thinking about.
Right.
And that was the end game that you were that you were inevitably drawn to every time.
And I think that's the missing ingredient, is that if you're going on a date with a guy that you're in a committed relationship, you are anticipating all day long.
Right.
It's going to end in
right.
Day.
Yeah. Right.
And
people
so
say, I hear couples say, I don't like the idea of planning sex. Where's the romance and the mystery? I say romance and mystery are euphemisms for celibacy. Because you know what? If I waited till we were both feeling it in the heat of the passion, in the middle of, at 8:30 at night when the kids are in bed, that's going to happen twice a year.
Right.
You know what? We got to work for it.
Yeah.
And it's worth working for it. It gets your head in the game. You get it on your radar. I think of it like yoga. It's the best thing for you. It's good for your soul. It's good for your body. It's good for your connection to the universe. It's good for your connection with your spouse or your partner.
But you got to make time for it.
You got to make time for it.
It's hard to let
And it's hard
slip
to make time.
Off your radar.
Dr. Oz, they're on Oprah saying that you got to have it 3 times a week to live a good and healthy long life.
Yeah. Now, while that would be healthy, but it's not realistic. For most couples, say that they are aiming for once a week and they're not even getting there.
That's what another chapter we have is called The Weekly Standard, because we really were trying to get that. Everyone wants to know the number. Like, what's normal?
Tell us the number.
The Weekly Standard. If you can be having it once a week, that's, for most people, it's more like, sex frequency is they're not hard and fast numbers. They're more like terrorism zones. You know, you're in the orange zone, the yellow zone, the red zone, whatever. And most people, they're in the green zone if they're somewhere within, having it about once a week. Mm-hmm. And the doctors we talk to, the ones that will go on record for it, they say once a week is good for the health, mm-hmm. the health for men and women, and it's important to keep
healthy
the blood
gear.
Flow going.
You got
to
get what is it?
Oxygenated whatnot.
Gear. Keeping the gear oxygenated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keeping
well,
it tuned.
It
yeah.
You got to use it.
Maintained.
Yeah. You really do. Mm-hmm. Stuff stiffens up.
So, but what are the doctors reporting, or what's your sense of what most people are having? What sex?
I think,
once a month?
Oh, I would say I couldn't generalize because it's very different. Some people have very erratic schedules where they have it's very concentrated, and then they have periods of drought.
Vacation sex,
yeah. Weekend sex, mm-hmm. People who are teachers, very much on that schedule. People who have seasonal jobs that are heavier in the winter, they're not having as much. Most people we talk to are having it, I'd say once every 2 weeks yeah. to once a week. Now, there's many studies out there that take a much larger
sample,
but ours is from the trenches of people.
The whole thing of expectations and what the media has out there. There was a poll I read last year in one of the men's magazines, and it said the average male is having sex for 3.5 hours a week. Now, with a generous 30 minutes of time, that's once a day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seven times a week. That is not happening.
No,
but
perhaps
that's
including masturbation.
Yeah,
well, it's
like
and a lot
be.
Of it. It
with
might,
what?
It better be.
And, John Gray says that men should masturbate every day.
You know,
which
what?
Is great. Hey,
takes the heat off the lassies. That's for sure.
Takes the pressure off.
And that was his point.
Yeah,
is that give women a break because they're not up for.
And we
every
tell
day.
Women too,
yeah.
like give them like don't come down on them for that because this is
don't be threatened by that.
Would you
don't be threatened by
yeah.
that? It's
don't
a very
be threatened.
Important. Message.
And women. Betty Dodson, who's a sexologist who has been very inspirational for us, and she one of the most knowledgeable people we worked with, and she talks about. It's very important for couples to masturbate. We're on a different plane. She's not even a believer in monogamy. And we said, but we were all on the same page of pleasure. And she said, for those who want a long-term relationship, you should masturbate alone, both people, and masturbate together. And that was news to me. I was thinking, I save my orgasms for game day. Like, I'm not going to waste them on masturbating, But she got me thinking, maybe that she thinks that's healthy. Like, uh-huh. I thought, okay,
and
she really expanded my mind.
She was an eye-opener, too. She said, you guys, you're not spring chickens, but you are in your prime. And things change. And it really got us thinking down the road that it's not going to be as tough as it is now. It gets tougher as you go along. Some things get easier, some things get tougher. So you've got to have an open mind and be really open to and wary of your own pleasure and your partner's pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And to expand the notion of sex. I think that's really important when I'm talking with couples in my practice is that, you can extend your just lying together. You can say
intimacy.
That,
yeah.
It's just being intimate and being with one another and touching and having physical pleasure. It doesn't always have to be intercourse.
That's something, I don't know where I read it, but when my husband and I first started being innkeepers, we had a 9-month-old, a 2-year-old, and a 4-year-old. It was a ridiculous situation. And we're making all the beds. We're doing the bathrooms. We're doing way too much, way out over our skis. What were we thinking? But we were in it. And we just, our intimacy was,
in
the hallway, handing the baby back and forth and certainly having sex regularly, but there wasn't much intimacy outside of sex and we were just on the run. And we made a point, I had read it somewhere, I said, to hug or kiss in the day, non-sexual contact, intimate touching. And that really brought us back to a connected place. Mm-hmm. And that, I just think that was a really important thing, that intimacy as well as sex, in and out, all those things.
Yes, that you can't only be intimate when you're having sex.
Right.
Because
and
then
a lot of women do say what enhances their desire for their men is when they do have that contact during the day.
Without intention.
Where he's saying, he's touching me in a way where there's no sex for him in the next, near future. He's just showing that I mean more to him than a sex object.
Right. It's very, very important.
Yeah.
We're talking with Cindy Pierce and Edie Morgan, the authors of Finding the Doorbell, which is about sexual satisfaction for the long haul. You're listening to member-supported Arts and Roots Radio, KCSN 88.5 FM, named Best of LA by Los Angeles Magazine. And this is Shrink Wrap, and I'm marriage and family therapist Phyllis Chase. So you guys tell me how you are received in your own families now that you've come out with this book.
Edie, you were first on this one, sister.
So we had, it was very exciting for me to get a book contract, be writing a book. Had the thing almost done. I still had not told my mother.
I love it.
In fact, her older sisters were like, have you told mom yet?
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So that was painful. And finally, we'd gone to New York to talk to a variety of these experts that you do not find in the Yellow Pages that would tell you about all kinds of things. We did a lot of groundwork for this. And I got back from New York. My mom said, oh, did you have a good time with Cindy? I said, yeah. Did you find a publisher for your book? And I was really taken aback. I said, what book do you think I'm writing, Mom? And she said, that book about ski racing that I read the manuscript for. I said, oh, the good news is we got a publisher, Mom.
The bad news is
that it's not about ski racing. She was a champ. She was great. I mean, she is the Puritan to me. She is dyed-in-the-wool East
she's
Coast.
Proud. Now she's proud.
But she, you know, my mom and my dad read it. I was a little appalled when I found that, but they were both really positive about it and can continue to be positive about it. So that's been nice for me.
Great. Yeah. And how about your husbands? Yeah.
Oh, the husbands. My husband's well versed in being thrown under the bus along with me. So he has, his sex life has been sprayed all over the place, and he just is so used to it, and he just goes with it.
He just wants me to sell a lot of books. He's proud of me, and he's really, mm-hmm. and he did say, you know, people say, well, has it improved your sex life? And somebody asked that in front of us. In front of both of us the other day, and I didn't really know what he was going to say. And he stepped up and he said, yeah, you know what it did? It reminded us to take the time to remember that we as a couple are the most important part of this relationship. And yeah, the kids are important, but the strength of our family comes from our relationship because we're what
Great.
Started it all.
Sure. And I often say as a therapist that the most important thing you can give your children is a loving relationship, and part of that includes the intimacy of sex.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's great. So tell us a little bit more about your book, because it's so humorous, and I think that's an aspect that many people don't expect when they're going to go buy a sex book.
Yeah, well, we have, it's loaded with anecdotes and stories from all kinds of people. So it's really like people in the trenches of their lives reporting back to us. So it's, you can go through the book and read quotes throughout, but it's divided into three sections. The first section being obstacles to a healthy sex life, including, you know, the sources, how we all grow up. You know, we were just talking today how most people don't have good sources when they're young, and that's both the combination of parents and school. You start off on the wrong foot with wrong information, mostly gleaned from, you know, the bus, recess,
scoundrel
sketchy.
Friends.
Yes,
that think they have the good information.
What do you say, brothers with a
brothers
hustler
with
and
a
some derelict friends?
Yeah.
She always says. And so when you start out in that place, and then you grow up and get married, where are you? You just haven't had the, it's just a bad combination.
Especially you get married, I think you think you're going to be released into the hands of someone who knows all the answers, and you get there with someone else who's got the same source issue.
Yeah.
Most of us do.
Sources.
And then once you're married, you don't have that, you know, say the open communication that you might have in college.
Did you find that most people's sex lives changed after they were married?
Yes.
When?
Kids.
I think most
kids
people report
a big
with
turning
kids,
point.
Yeah. But I think it comes a little earlier. Myself.
Well, there, I think there's the year, I can't say this word, but when you're sort of struck by the, you're in the limerence, they call that phase, where you're in the glow, you can't get enough. And so there's that first phase after a year and a half, where you drop out of that zone. And the advice I give to my nieces and nephews and all the young people I work with and talk with is that never decide to get married until you're a little bit annoyed with a person about the little stuff. Like, get through the limerence phase. So when you're feeling pesky, annoyed, and then you can start really working on the relationship. And then the marriage, initially things are good. But I think a year and a half seems like in a long-term relationship is when things start to get real.
And it depends on the circumstances. Really, I mean, what kind of crises you face and how you work through them, or if you work through them. So we got obstacles, and that includes like body image is a huge one for women. Then we call it the iceberg, that you can't go through it. You've got it. Men need to steer around it. Women need to get around it because it's, you know, I know you can't get over it. So you got to go around it.
So you're talking about self-acceptance of your body.
A big message we have is be in your body.
Be in your body.
Live in the body that was given to you. Get, and men are more interested in a responsive partner than a physically perfect partner. Mm-hmm. And someone who's spending the brain space and energy, trying to achieve that better body and loathing parts of their body, that energy, how can you give of yourself and have an enjoyable sexual experience when you're so critical of yourself? So whatever it is, my whole thing is, get behind what you got. Get behind it. Mm-hmm. And what you put behind it comes through. And men are so appreciative of that.
They really are. And they want a happy woman.
Yes.
Know? So however you can make yourself happy with your body, do it. And
yeah.
It's not about becoming thin. It's about being happy now with your
right.
body. Is
yeah.
what you're saying. Great. Yeah.
We start each chapter with a little quote from a man, quote from a woman. And they're funny little takes on whatever this topic is. And my favorite one, I think, is from the iceberg awareness, the body image one. And it's from the male. Says, we care a whole lot less about your body than you think. All we care is that you rub it up against ours.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is yeah. what most men say. They're like 10, 15, 20 pounds. Like, we're not concerned.
Yeah.
Like, we're ready to roll. And a woman, after they have a baby, talking about, complaining about their body. I'm so out of shape. I really don't feel comfortable with my body.
And they just don't want to be touched either.
I feel fat. And and after hearing that every day for 6 months, finally the husband is like, well, why don't you join the gym? Mistake. Red flag. And he doesn't mean that he's responding to what she's doing. And then she turns around. What do you think? I'm fat? Well,
right.
you've been saying it for 6 months. And now he's, sometimes they're mean, sketchy guys who do say, get to the gym, lose some weight, because then I'll,
right.
That conditional business, that's no good. But there are plenty of men who are just responding to your complaints, just saying, well, I'd like to see you mentally healthy. So, but
sure.
we should get to the second section of the book.
Oh, yeah. It's all about orgasms. It's
all about it.
What is it called? Orgasm.
What's the big O?
What's the big O deal?
Yeah. What's the big O deal?
So it's all, how to have them, why to have them,
The mechanics of them.
What they are.
And what's the biggest stumbling block out there that people are talking? Because you guys really come from the trenches, I think.
I think that the assumption, women assuming that sex alone, 80 to 85% of women don't have orgasms with intercourse alone, and that they need extra stimulus from his hand, her hand, or a vibrator. And with that knowledge, that's liberating for men.
And that's
they've been fumbling around in the origami trying to figure it all out in there, and it's just not that simple and straightforward.
And that's another thing with the newness of a relationship. You don't know that because you're so excited. The mental part of an orgasm is so huge, especially for women, that you're so excited about this new person and about everything else in the relationship. That's contributing to the orgasm. And so once that's gone and you're just, you're just sort of in the groove of marriage, then it's not so easy anymore. And that's when you need to know those stats, that most women need some help to get there. They need a little extra stimulation.
Now, the third section of the book is really the meat of the book. That's about the long haul, sustaining it for the long haul. And that's where we get into faking. Faking's in the answer.
What do you want to say about faking orgasms?
We should mention it. It's
bad training.
Cruel.
Yeah.
Cruel.
To yourself and to him.
Oh. To everyone. You're not helping anyone.
Because we're not talking about men faking orgasms.
No.
Some do.
Although some do.
I know they do.
Some do. But
they
do. Mostly women faking orgasms either to get through it or because they feel embarrassed that they're incapable.
Or they want to. What should they do instead?
Communicate.
They should communicate and say, that's not working. This would work. And show them, put your hand over his hand, show them the guidance.
Way. I call it be their GPS.
Yeah.
Zone them right in.
Because otherwise you are, I think it comes from a nice place. People want to make each other feel good and feel like they're doing a good job, but you're not helping either.
Right. And I think we all have a hesitation to tell people what to do and how to do it.
But this
here
is a place
you need it.
Yes.
So, one of our big messages is give guidance and ask for guidance.
Yeah.
On both ends. It takes two.
Okay. Yeah. So the third part of the book. So
for the long haul, it's, we get into the distractions, porn and beyond, and how to manage that situation.
But before
which is
that, it's
thing.
The little things that get you laid.
Yes.
The accounting relationship of your positive balance that is about the accounting relationship, the tit for tat. The opening quote on that is, doesn't matter, woman saying, doesn't matter how your life was, your relationship was before kids, after kids, it is tit for tat. And it is. I mean, you get crazy things like people saying, well, I changed 6 diapers in a row. And I had, 20 minutes of free time today and he had 4 hours. I mean, there's a lot of budgeting that goes on in people's head just at trying to, because you're trying to
so
get parity
the
in the relationship.
And the
bitterness.
Yeah. And it's never equal. I mean, it's just,
right.
It's so always
get over
in
that.
Flux.
It ain't fair.
Nope.
Yeah. And work it out and have awareness of that. And I think there's ways around that.
And know that this is, it's tough time. And you're going to come through it, but it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take the planning for sex. It's going to take, you know, planning away games. Away games are a big thing.
Away games, meaning going to a hotel.
Somewhere yes. else, yeah. making it happen, doing date night, whatever
doing
it takes.
Doing date nights, because I think that's really important, big, as you're saying, planning it and talking about it. And I think that's the huge value of your book is that, or your show, is that, you know, people can read it and laugh and talk. It opens up the discussion. It gives them a platform.
Yeah, and we want to just, make sure people have the realistic expectations.
Yeah, that it is okay to have a sexless marriage. You can get back to it.
You can.
There's hope.
There is. That's what it's all about, hope.
Thank you guys so much for being here. I love this book, Finding the Doorbell, Sexual Satisfaction for the Long Haul. And if you want to go to their website, it is called FindingTheDoorbell.com. And if you have any comments or questions or would like to be on the show, you may email me at shrink@kcsn.org, because I'd love to hear from you. So join me next week when we will be once again having one of our master therapists interviews. It's the fourth Tuesday of the month. So we'd love to have you hear that interview. This is Shrink Wrap, and it's broadcast every Tuesday evening at drive time to help you unwrap the issues blocking your road to a happy and fulfilling life. Tune in to Shrink Wrap, because it's really all about tuning into you. I'm West Hollywood psychotherapist Phyllis Chase, and I specialize in working with creatives, couples, and lead my 7-week course, Love on Purpose, which connects women to their life purpose and the power of intentional loving. You can reach me at my website, phyllischase.com, or call me at 310-402-8888. Stay tuned for Eyes of the World with Pat Baker coming up next. Named Best of LA by Los Angeles Magazine, you're tuned to member-supported 88.5 FM KCSN and KCSN HD Northridge, Los Angeles, a broadcast service of California State University Northridge since 1963. Also on the web at kcsn.org, Arts and Roots Radio for Southern California and the world. Doctor, my eyes, I cannot see the sky. Is this the price for having learned how not to cry? The views expressed on the preceding program do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of KCSN, nor those of California State University Northridge, nor the California State University system.